This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Ryan Rucco joins us right now. Rooks, first of all, I'm looking forward to being able to finally hear this.
Goodbye, sir.
When are we going to get that from you?
Good question, Alan. I don't know yet when you will get it. Well, actually, I do know the answer. You will never get that call again because it's, you know, John Filippelli put the kibosh on it a few years ago. But I hope you will get a home run call at some point, man. It's weird, though. I was just doing my game boards yesterday, getting ready for Nets and WNBA coming up end of next week. And or end of this week, rather, for WNBA. And dude, it feels so strange, like, doing game boards again. Like, you know, just getting back in play-by-play mode after you're going. Now, all of a sudden, you know, you have 4 months of none of that, and now it's going to really ramp up. So I'm excited to get back, but it feels weird.
Yeah, I mean, you do basically everything. So you have Nets, you have WNBA, you have NBA as well, and then, of course, the Yankees stuff. So you go from 0 to 100. You go from the guy that, you know, I know you have the great podcast, of course, with CeCe Sabathia, and we got some Star Wars to talk in a minute. But, you know, now all of a sudden it's like, I imagine for you, your schedule goes from, boy, when am I going to get back to work, to it's all coming at you really fast, and you've got to be able to transition what you're great at from one sport or even one team or two teams to something else. But I imagine you're embracing this.
Oh, yeah, dude, 100%, man. I can't wait. You know, I want to do as much, you know, Yankees, as much Nets on YES as possible. I want to do as much WNBA and NBA on ESPN as possible. Like, I, you know how much I love this. Like, it's, you know, it's a passion for me and an art and a craft, and I'm obsessed with play-by-play, and I've missed it, man. Like, I've really missed that feeling of, you know, painting the picture and calling the action and getting lost in the energy of the moment. And so I will take as much of it as I can. When I was talking with our coordinating producer for WNBA, Sarah Guerrero, and I said, she said, like, yeah, we're probably going to get some more games. And I was like, oh, awesome. And she's like, yeah, there's going to be, you know, like 24 national games. Usually we do 16, you know, between July 24th and August 13th. And I was like, oh, you mean July 24th and September 13th when the regular season ends? She's like, no. I mean August 13th. I was like, whoa. So we're doing just in WNBA, we're doing, you know, 50% more games than we normally do, and we're doing that in just the first 3 weeks of the regular season. Wow. And I could not be happier about it, yeah. Nor could Rebecca Lobo, because we're all, you know, we're all starved for sports, man. We can't wait to get back.
Yeah, it's tremendous. Just seeing what we saw ratings-wise over this weekend, right? Like, Yankees,
yeah,
Mets,
yeah.
Scrimmages. Like, they weren't even, like, they don't count. And yet, I know it was a Saturday night. I was tuned in. Both nights, yep. Locked in watching. But I'm also the nerd that was watching when you guys on YES were covering inter-squad scrimmages. I mean, I'm tuned into that. That's how hungry we are here. But that's a good sign, isn't it? That we are starting to get back to some normalcy. And with that, we're allowed to now start talking about not old classic games and old classic debates and the last dance and things like that. We can start talking about, okay, where are we and what's the future like? I watched the Yankees this weekend, and my take was they are that team that when you watch them and at full health, this could be, and I know it's going to be an odd year because it's 60 games. I get that part of it. But just in general, when we look back on this season, this could be a real special team. Just looking at it from the pitching standpoint, the youth standpoint, and obviously the power that they have and the depth that they have.
Yeah, 100%. Alan, I totally agree, man. Watching it, I've obviously been working it, so yeah. I've been locked in, but I've also just been locked in as a fan as well, trying to consume all the content I can, right, in advance of the season because we're so starved for it. And I've loved watching them throughout these inter-squad games. And then the last couple nights, finally seeing them face a different opponent. And, you know, they look like a well-oiled machine, which is remarkable given, you know, obviously the constraints that everyone has dealt with over the last 4 months. For them to look as as sharp and as focused as they have. And, you know, sometimes we talk about mentality and we kind of use it as a cliche, right? Or you know, something that, yeah, you know what, they've got the right attitude. And you're like, okay, did that really tell me anything? But I actually believe with this particular season, the Yankees having the mentality that they do and the focus that they do is very important, because this would be a year, because of how irregular it is, that I think it'd be a lot easier to not be all in, you know, to not be so championship focused, to feel like, all right, well, you know, we're going to do this because this is what we do. We want to get paid. But like, yeah, this doesn't really feel like our normal competition. This is weird. Or if you have a key player who's not there, you know, like let's say even competitive teams like the Dodgers or Braves, Dodgers will be without David Price, Braves without Nick Markakis. Like, I do wonder how it affects the collective energy of the group when you know, like, hey, like one of our key pieces, like he decided like this wasn't worth it. You know, it's not like he was hurt and we have to overcome it. Like, he decided like, this isn't the right thing for me to do. Like, I don't think this is a smart choice. Like, I do think that could cut away at a team's energy a little bit. So the fact that the Yankees have all these guys who clearly were working during the quarantine period, clearly are focused and all have had the right mentality as far as what you'd want to hear as a fan. Like, hey, you know, we don't care if it's short in season. We want a championship. Like, I actually think that's going to be a real advantage for this group.
We're talking with Ryan Rucco, old friend, joining us here on the show as he's about to get real busy covering just about everything NBA, WNBA, Yes Network with the Nets, and also with the Yankees as well. And just staying on the Yankees and really just more of what we saw this weekend, Yankees and Mets, both at Citi Field and also at Yankee Stadium. You saw cutout fans in the background, which was kind of a cute thing, a little funny. But you heard the piped in crowd noise, which we were all wondering, you know, what's that going to sound like? Is it going to be kind of weird? Is it going to be kitschy? Is it going to be, you know, are we not going to like it? I got to be honest, from a broadcast perspective, and again, you working as well, so I know you're tuned into it, and I know you heard some of it also on Friday and some of the scrimmages. It didn't bother me, and I don't feel like, and maybe it's just baseball, I'd be curious to see what it starts looking like when we do it, when we see NBA. It doesn't seem like it takes too much away, and I almost feel like I was focusing that much more on the game because it was all that was happening. You agree?
Yeah, I agree. I think it, you know, for me, I like it. I think that as much as, look, it's a television product now, right? It is going to be for some period of time exclusively a television product. And so now you have to think about how can you make it the best experience possible for the viewer. It's not like it's not inauthentic because we all know the deal, right? Like, nobody's like trying to hide the fact that like there's more noise. You know, this isn't the Colts and the Patriots pumping in crowds noise, you know? Like, I mean, this is, we all know exactly what it is. And because of that, I think it's easier to accept. And then it sort of like can trance you into more of a focused watch to what you were talking about, Alan. And then also like a little more sense of normalcy and engagement and importance. So I actually like it. Like, does it feel a little weird? Yeah, of course it does. But I do like it. I like it better than silence. And I have to say, I actually liked the cardboard cutouts.
I did.
I know they look kind of funny and weird and whatever, but to me, I actually like that look. When you're, you know, watching a game and you're seeing either empty seats behind home plate or seeing that, I actually think there's some value to having, you know, some form of activity there. You know, I'm all for it. Whatever we can do to create the television product and make it as close to, you know, what it would normally be like as possible and as enhanced as possible. I'm open to virtual fans, Alan. I'm open to all of that stuff because I think for the time being, and hopefully it's not the whole season, right? Hopefully at some point you do get some portion of the crowd in there, even if they're socially distanced and in masks. But for the time being, I want to do whatever I can to enhance the television product.
Yeah, I'm hoping, because, you know, we see NASCAR already letting, you know, a smaller amount or a smaller percentage of their capacity in. And, you know, we'll see how that works out for them long term. But if you get to a World Series, even to get to a championship level. Like I'm even hoping for the NBA too, that if the NBA can figure out how to at least have some people in the building for at least the NBA finals, just to give it a little bit more of a big time feel. But you know, I go back to what Gerrit Cole said on Friday, and by the way, he hasn't pitched a meaningful pitch yet for the Yankees, and he's my favorite player. I mean, I love listening to him talk about the game. I love how just he nerds out about it, and yet he's also such a fierce competitor as well. Having a guy like that in the clubhouse, having a guy like that on your team is so valuable. Just to have a guy like him. But he even said it, and it's not like I'm paying attention. I don't really – you hear the crowd a little bit. You hear the fake crowd noise a little bit. It doesn't really bother you. You know, even the cutouts or something like that. He's like, I'm not the type that looks into the crowd anyway. But when you are watching just the game – I caught myself doing this too when they played at Citi Field. If I'm watching just the battery, all you're seeing are kind of faces in the crowd behind. And so I'm not focused on them. And it almost feels like, oh, there's people there. You know, I believe there was a scout sitting among them at one point.
Right?
There was somebody sitting there, and it was like it all just looked blended together. So I guess we can get away with it a little bit on that. But as we transition to the NBA stuff, and I'm sure the WNBA is going to have the same type of deal as well. And you mentioned some of the virtual crowd. I believe it was it MLS that's been doing that with the Matrix boards and people from home?
Yeah.
Right?
I think so, yeah.
Can you do that in the NBA? Would that work?
That's a good question, Alan. I don't know. I mean, I think the good news is, you know, the NBA is certainly very open-minded to any possibility, you know, and whatever is going to be cutting edge. And so, you know, I think that you will see – you know, certain things that are, you know, new and feel like, you know, ways to enhance the television product so that it doesn't feel like basketball in an empty gym, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly what all those specifics will be, but I'm sure you're going to see some of them. And I think you should, you know, I think you should. I think that, you know, we have learned over the last 4+ months how to adapt technologically, right? And how to make this happen. Like, I don't know, Alan, if you're at home or back in the studio now doing the show, but like we, you know, obviously for a period of time, everybody had to adjust to, okay, you're only going to, you know, operate from home. Okay, now you're going to go in certain days, whatever. Point being is like we had to dive into aspects of technology we didn't know necessarily existed or that we could make as efficient as we needed to be to uphold the standard of product. But I think, like, you know, we a lot of times, especially in the sports world, right, we're traditionalists and we don't want to see things change, but like this thrusts us into change. And who knows, like we might love virtual fans. It might be like, yo, this is great. Like it, for me as a viewer, like if it's someone real on TV or it's not, what do I care? It's not like I have a relationship with the people I'm seeing behind home plate in the shot, you know. It's true. Just sort of creating the ambiance for me.
Right.
So if you put virtual people there, like maybe it just creates more of an ambiance. Same thing with like NBA crowd. You know, for the players, I don't know if it's going to do much for them, but for the viewer at home, I actually do think that stuff can enhance the experience, even though it's going to be a little weird.
Yeah. Again, it's the new normal, as we talk about. And by the way, it's now 20 weeks I have been out of the studio. 20 straight weeks we've been doing this show out of the studio. And as you said, I know you guys have done it at Yes as well. It's you figure it out. I mean, Bart and I will use FaceTime during the show so we can at least see each other while we're doing the show. And you know how it works. You've done it. You have to make the eye contact sometimes. You got to, you know, put your hand up or whatever. So we do it that way. And it's become so normal. We've spent more time out of the studio than we have in the studio together since the show started in January. Isn't that it's crazy,
yeah.
But that's just what we've gotten. We've gotten used to it, you know, and that's what we all have to do. But we are, again, it's still competition. And it's going to be about who can win and what we're going to see out of these teams. And as we get ready for the NBA to restart, I mean, it's got to be LeBron and the Lakers that everybody has their eyes on. Can LeBron do this sprint with that team and win that championship that you know for him is going to be critically important for him and his legacy? Or is this the type of scenario, because of no crowds, because it's in a bubble and players are around each other and stuff, that this could be the one that is that year where like anyone can win? because it's just so different and so odd. Like you mentioned, no crowds, no home crowd, no home court advantage, no intensity, none of that stuff. Some guys might actually be more comfortable with the fact that there aren't crowds. I think James Harden might thrive. Like, I think the Rockets might be that team I'd be afraid to play against, because a guy like him, you know, hears everything. But when he's just in his zone, he might be the most dangerous player in the game. So when you're thinking about the NBA, and obviously you'll be calling some games too, do you think that this could be a wide open race, or do you still think it's typical NBA? There's probably three teams that have the best chance to win this thing.
No, I think it's more wide open. I actually very much subscribe to your theory on the Rockets and James Harden, and I believe that they will be an incredibly dangerous team. I think that, you know, the reason why I think it's more wide open is just because you've drastically multiplied the variables, right? Like, and when you do that, there's going to be more of a chance that things happen differently than they normally do or that you plan for. You know, it looked like it was going to be Lakers or Clippers out of the West, right? And right. I would have said it was going to be Bucks or Celtics out of the East. But, you know, the margin between these teams is not so drastic that you couldn't have, let's say, you know, one team who had, you know, two key pieces who were all in on their workouts over the last 4 months and one team who didn't, you know, and maybe that affects the, you know, their efficacy or their ability to ramp up endurance wise, or, you know, in some ways, even the chemistry, you know, on floor, you know, or, you know, you could have a team that was like kind of on the brink. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the Toronto Raptors are a tougher team than they would have been maybe in the playoffs, like this time around. Because, like, I really, really think that Nick Nurse is about as good as it gets when it comes to ingenuity and winning a single game, you know, and developing the proper mindset of his group. And could he not say, like, you know, I mean, could he not get that group flowing and believing that, like, why couldn't you upset somebody in this circumstance? You know, I just think that, like, I think that when you break the normal inertia of the season, all of a sudden, like, things don't feel inevitable. You know, it kind of feels like a new slate. And because of that, I do think it widens the field. You know, maybe in the East it widens it so that Toronto is even more of a viable player and Philadelphia is, you know, and you're looking at them and you're saying, hey, you know, these teams can really compete. Or, you know, maybe in the West it does welcome in a team like, you know, like Houston, you know, or maybe an upset in one round. But the other more tangible thing, Alan, why I think it widens is the virus itself. You know, if you have one team end up with a key player who gets it and they miss 2 weeks, you know, and I mean, I know that goes without saying and that's nothing we can predict, but like, that's why I think the field opens up even more, you know, because, you know, there is, you know, there's a real chance, and the NBA is doing a great job mitigating it as much as humanly possible. But, you know, there's a chance that you're going to have some key team lose a key player in a playoff series and then not be able to get back on the floor. And if that happens, you know, obviously that could swing a series one way or another. So I think it's going to feel like a crapshoot. I do think, Alan, that when you talk about the teams competing and the players competing, I think that they're going to, you know, regardless of crowd or whatever, I think they're going to be fully invested because, you know, when you're on that floor going up against somebody else who's great at their craft, you know, you just want to beat them. You know, you do. Like, when you're a competitor, you just want to beat them. So that part of it, I think, will feel like normal when we're watching the players actually compete against each other. But I just think the circumstances around it widen the field a bit.
Yeah, I do agree that when it is a legit game, you're definitely going to see the competition level rise up. And it's also the great players are the ones that are going to dictate that too, because they're the ones that are going to decide where this scrimmage is going. If you've ever seen those scrimmages in those gyms, the best players are the ones that really decide how hard we're going to play today. And I think you'll certainly see that. But it's going to feel like AAU. And for a lot of guys, it's going to be that part, I think, will also play into this thing. Before I let you go, and again, Ryan Rucco joining us here. And Rooks, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks for giving giving us some time here. Sabrina, I ask you, what does she mean for not just the Liberty, but for the WNBA? You're going to be calling a lot of their games. A superstar coming out of college, a player who really, again, became more of a mainstream athlete that everybody got to know. The league has seen players like this come into it, but she, there's something special about her with the next generation of fans. What does she mean, and how excited are you to see what she can do at this level?
Man, I'm so excited, and, you know, I do think that it shows our engagement and interest in her, right, that we have her in our opening game. You know, we have Seattle, New York, which will happen this Saturday at noon, and it'll be, you know, Sue Bird against Sabrina Ionescu, you know, the best point guard in the league's history against, you know, one who certainly hopes to rise to that place. So I think that Sabrina is amazing for the sport because she crosses over like you're talking about, because she's a star who, you know, even the casual sports fan has heard of. I also think that the Liberty being good is going to be good for the league as well. And I do think Sabrina will bring wins to this team, even if it's not this year, because of how many rookies they have. I think they'll be better than people would think. And I think eventually they will be, you know, a championship contender. And then, you know, when we get back to normal, you're going to have, you know, Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving sitting courtside at Barclays Center to watch Sabrina. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that stuff's great for the league. I think it's huge. You know what? I also think her connection with Kobe is huge. You know, Kobe was an incredible ambassador for the WNBA. And I think, you know, they had, I mean, she would call Kobe her best friend. You know, she had this incredible connection to Kobe. And I think she almost, you know, takes the torch, even though she was going to be on the floor and he was going to be off it. You know, he was going to be this very front and center champion of the league, you know, and now she is sort of the player that embodies the support of Kobe, you know. And so for all those reasons, and most importantly, her incredibly dynamic skill set and competitive nature, I think she's going to be must-watch TV. And I think she's going to be a real factor in the league for years to come, and sports in general. Like, she will definitely permeate the New York sports scene. You will at times on your show talk about Sabrina Ionescu, and that's good.
Wow, you're calling it now. I'll take it. All right, before I let you go, Rooks, I can't let you go without at least one little Star Wars thing. All right. I saw you tweet that, because I've seen rankings for the movies, and everybody wants to power rank them, you know, all the different episodes, right? And
yes,
you have Return of the Jedi as number one over to me, arguably the greatest sequel ever in movie history. Yeah, I said it. Empire Strikes Back. Explain yourself.
Well, okay, so you are right in the sense of Empire Strikes Back, I would say, is a better movie. Okay, if I had to just break down quality,
the greatest
of the movie,
twist,
right,
in the history of movie making. I mean, yeah, the greatest dilemma.
100%. And it's not. And I am obsessed with Empire. I love Empire. It's no slight to Empire. My reason, and it's just my personal favorite. If you ask me, what do I think is the better quality movie? I still would go Empire.
Okay,
but my reason for loving Return of the Jedi and why it's number one on me is when you go to Empire Strikes Back, like, I don't think you've felt any conflict in Vader yet, right? Like, you know, he reveals this information, but there's no part of you that sees, like,
no, he's still evil,
any softening on him. Yeah, right. And there's no hint of softening. And my two favorite scenes come in that movie. One, when Luke goes to turn himself in to Vader, and Vader talks about, like, so you've accepted it, whatever, right. And he says, I can feel the conflict, you know, within you, Father. Mm-hmm. Come with me. The first time, not in the throne room, but the first time. And he says, it's too late for me, son.
Right.
The Emperor is your master now, whatever, and choose him away. And then when Luke leaves, and he says, like, then my father is truly dead. And
right.
And Vader leans on, like, that railing. You know, he leans
as if
on
he
the
was,
railing.
Yeah.
And like, he's exasperated. And it's almost like he's exhaling, like, shoot, he's right, I am conflicted. And and he does this all without saying a word. And without you seeing his facial expressions.
Physical.
And it's like,
yeah,
oh, it's amazing.
But Ryan,
that's my favorite scene.
But that's when he becomes emo Darth. Like, I can't, I'm not. I thought it was just far more compelling.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
It was far more compelling to see him literally, like, trying to, like, when he reveals that, and then I thought the conflict in Luke, as if he realized, like, now my life makes sense. Now all this stuff that I'm seeing, all these visions, all this stuff, this is now all making sense. And, oh, my God. This is really happening. Like, that was so far more compelling. But you know what? They're already yelling at me because I'm way too long. So we're gonna have to do this some other time. But I love your reasoning. But I think at least we can agree that they're definitely among the top two in the great saga. But we'll discuss more at another time.
I love it.
I know you're extremely busy. Man. It's great to catch up with you again. Thanks so much. I look forward to hearing you on whatever network for whatever game, but that's your versatility, and I love it. So all the best to you, Rooks. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, brother.
So the MLB returns this week. The Bronx Bombers will start things off on Thursday night, 7 o'clock. We have the game coverage right here on 98.7 ESPN. You've got the K-Show leading right into it. And you know what else you got? You got Chris Carlin, who's doing a live pregame discussion right before the game begins. So he'll talk about the long-awaited return of baseball, the upcoming season. He might even take a question or two for those who tune into this. So how do you do it? 15 minutes before the game, so 6:45 on Instagram Live. Chris Carlin.
We'll do it live!
That's right. The 98.7 FM underscore ESPN New York Instagram account. So it's 987 FM underscore ESPN New York. Go to that Instagram account. You'll have Chris Carlin Thursday, 6:45. Jump in, ask questions, be part of the conversation, and then sit back and watch some live sports right here in New York. It's brought to you by 98.7 ESPN as well. Again, 800-919-3776 for the calls. Han Solo, because Bart is with the K-Show. So Bart and Han is just Han Solo today. Bart will be back tomorrow, but you get Bart in a couple minutes on the K-Show. But right now, we press on with Audio Files.
The Audio File.
By the way, a bit of news here. According to Steve Politi of NJ.com, Governor Phil Murphy in New Jersey has told the Jets and the Giants there will be no fans in the stadium at MetLife for the coming 2020 season. That's what he says for now. They're keeping an eye on things.
No holds bad.
But that's the plan. So no one in the building for Jets or Giants. The Eagles have said the same thing in Philly, but the Patriots still holding out hope that they can get people in their building up in Massachusetts. Can't have a hockey tournament up in Massachusetts, of course. I had a couple of those postponed, canceled, moved, everything else. But let's make sure we get the Patriots fans up there, though. Let's get them up there. They got to watch the Pats, okay?
What are you waiting for, honestly? I mean, do you want them to chop me up and feed me to the poor? Is that what you guys want?
Yeah, your cousin from Boston. All right, Audio Files, here we go. First, Mark Spears on Get Up. NBA Mark Spears. So Zion Williamson has left the bubble, as we know, with a family issue that we hope everything will be okay. And then, of course, when he is ready to return, there's a whole process of getting Zion, and it's very important we do this, back in the bubble.
And it's really, really complicated. You know, his absence of 7 days or less, he has to quarantine 4 days upon his return to the bubble with a negative test needed each day. Longer than a week, he has to quarantine for 4 days. If he has a negative test, the final day, 7 days, he is gone. Without a required COVID testing, he will quarantine for 10 days. So the Pelicans will debut on July 30th. They're one of four teams that play in the first day of the resumption. It's not a lot of time between now and then. They have their first scrimmage in just a few days.
The whole idea of adding all these teams, 22 of them to be exact, was, for we all know, they wanted to get Zion involved. They'll tell you, he had teams that were close and they had a chance and we wanted to open it up and make it a little more competitive and we didn't want to have the awkwardness of, you know, just jumping right into a playoffs or some teams that would have been tough. Sure, yeah, that sounds great. But it's really because the league felt like we only got 37 games out of Zion. Let's get at least 8 more out of him before, and hopefully he can make the playoffs and get more. Be good bang for the buck. Well, now we'll see if Zion can play, you know, anytime soon. Now, again, this is a family emergency, and all of our thoughts are to make sure that whatever that emergency is ends up working out okay and everybody's all right. But this was part of the risk of opening up like this. Do you need all these teams? I mean, do the Washington Wizards really need to be in this thing? Especially with no Bradley Beal? I mean, you know, the Suns? The Kings? Nobody's available for the Kings. Marvin Bagley now is hurt. MRI now, he's out. It's just, it was odd that they tried to do it this way. They forced it this way. Too many people in the bubble means there's more of a chance that there will be a breach of the bubble. They got to get down to numbers quickly. And the NBA's got to work on it if they can. But no Zion's tough. We hope everything's all right. But, of course, we were looking forward to seeing what he looks like, because physically, he was looking like he was in tremendous shape. All right, moving on. So the other thing the league will announce, I don't think they made it official yet, but I know some reports have been out there, is that the idea of the MVP and rookie and all the other awards, Zion might have had a chance to win, but pretty much looked like Ja was going to win that one. MVP, though, was still, as you remember, when the league stopped on the 11th of March, LeBron was making a push. He was right there with Giannis. Some people thought a couple more games and LeBron might get past him to win another MVP. But the league said that all voting on season awards, these eight games will not count. So the only voting that matters will, the only games that matter will be up to March 11th. So, of course, that's going to suggest that, well, Giannis probably will run away with this thing. But LeBron James says, hold up a second.
You know, show what I'm capable of doing, you know, not only individually, but from a team's perspective, us being number one in the West. There was a lot of conversation about, you know, LeBron can do those things in the East, but if he ever came to the West, what can he do? You know, so, you know, I heard all of that, and to be able to have our team at the top of the Western Conference and playing the way that we were playing at that time and the way I was playing, you know, that's definitely a good feeling.
What is that saying about if you have to tell people your credentials, you're probably not, I don't know what the saying is. I'm just making
I don't even know what you're talking about, Shorty.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a thought about it, but it's basically if you have to brag about your credentials probably aren't really up to snuff. Like he clearly was closing in on Giannis, there's no question. But if you aren't supposed to take these eight games into account, and I think actually the voting will happen before they do the restart, I don't think he wins it. Don't you? Like, do you think LeBron James should be MVP based on what you saw up to March 11th? And oh, by the way, how much do you remember about what you saw up to March 11th? See, for LeBron's to his defense, the last things we remember are LeBron playing great. That's what we remember, but that's not really what the entire season up to March 11th was about. So Brian Windhorst, of course, he was on Get Up. He probably feels this way. Who is his pick for MVP?
Giannis Antetokounmpo has had one of the greatest statistical seasons we've seen in the modern era. Don't waste your money on the 5-1. Giannis is going to win the award. There's a chance that Giannis could win both MVP and Defensive Player of the Year. He's absolutely been spectacular. You look at his numbers, the raw data is absolutely impressive when you look at his efficiency and his scoring. When you think about what he does defensively for one of the greatest defenses we've seen in the regular season in at least 10 or 15 years. And you think about that he's actually played only a little over 30 minutes a game because they were protecting his minutes. A masterful season, and he's gonna get my vote, and he's going to also be a back-to-back MVP.
Wow. Okay, so he put it out there. All right, he put it out there. He got his vote. But it just makes sense. I mean, Giannis has had a great season. Once again, LeBron was closing in on him. Now, just so you mentioned that you heard the 5-1, he said. So March 5th, LeBron was a 10-1 underdog to win MVP. All right? This is Caesars that put these numbers out. By 2 days later, now remember, LeBron had that game against the Clippers where he went nuts. Completely dominates the Bucks in another nationally televised game. And then Giannis got hurt. And so all of a sudden, 2 days later, the odds for LeBron went from 10-1 to 5-1. And Giannis winning went from minus 3,000 to minus 800. So he was closing in on, no question. But head-to-head, Giannis is averaging 29.6 a game, 13.7 rebounds, and 5.8 assists, shooting 55% from the field. Those are incredible numbers. Now, LeBron, again, nothing to sneeze at. 25.7 points, 7.9 rebounds, 10.6 assists, and 50% from the field. So you have a player. And by the way, take LeBron off the floor. The Lakers are not nearly as good. We saw it. They're just not that good. Not as good. I mean, they have Anthony Davis, but I think AD is showing us he's not a guy that carries a team. He's still not that guy. LeBron is. Take Giannis off the floor. The Bucks are still a very good team, a well-oiled machine. Are they the same team without him? Of course not. But they still are competitive. So I think LeBron's case, what he's trying to make, is that, hey, you know, my impact on winning. But again, the fact that he would have to talk about winning an MVP, I like that he's candid about it and open about it. But I mean, I don't know. Giannis wins it. It'll be back to back. That's great. But all that matters is who gets the hardware at the very end of all this, the Larry O'Brien. And I'll tell you what, if I'm putting money on the Bucks or the Lakers, I think I'm going to put the money on the Lakers instead of the Bucks. Doesn't mean I think they're going to win it all. I'm just saying, if I had those two to choose from, I think I go with the Lakers. Do you? 800-919-3776. All right, that's Audio Files. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you, J-Dub. Let's take Bill in the car. Bill?
Hey, Alan. How you doing?
What's up?
I just wanted to talk to you about what you were saying about the Brooklyn Nets being the second-best team in New York. And I'll be honest, I have to see Kevin Durant prove that he can maintain his health after that surgery. I still am a little suspect on that. And also, I was wondering your thoughts on, I know you were talking about front offices being kind of the key foundational piece. Do you think if the Knicks secure that coach that we've been desperately looking for, I mean, God, maybe 20 years now, that with all the pieces with Leon Rose and, you know, all them other people, you know, coming in, do you think we might have a chance to start building something, you know, that we actually have a future here in New York sports? And then I guess the last question is, do you know any chance when the NFL might be lifting their hiring freeze? Because I don't have the ability to tell you what team, but I have a really good friend of mine who's basically has a contract waiting to sign to join as a coaching position for one of the NFL teams, but they can't obviously go through the official hiring process until that hiring freeze is lifted.
I didn't know there was a freeze in hiring when it comes to coaches, Bill. That's interesting that there was, but I mean, they're already trying to get, they're having a meeting actually as we speak, the owners are, to hammer out all the details about their restart or their startup, I should say, so that they can open up their buildings on Monday where the rookies are coming in for some teams and training camps will start to open up now over the next week or so. So I imagine that's what you have to look forward to is once they have that out there and once the players agree to it, then they can start getting into business. So maybe that's what your friend is waiting for. As for the Nets, I didn't say they were the second best team in New York. What I said was as far as teams that you would put your money on have a chance to win a championship next, Yankees are clear, far and away, the team that you would put your money on. You wouldn't even hesitate. After that, though, I think there's hesitation in everyone. But if there was another team, who's that team? And I just look at it as when you consider how stars win championships in the NBA, and the Nets have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and I do have a strong belief they're going to add a third star to that by the time you start the 2020-2021 season, that I would think that they are next in line. If you're putting odds on these teams, the Nets would be the team with the next best odds. It doesn't mean they're the next best team. I'm just saying the next best odds to win a championship would, to me, be the Nets. Then after the Nets, I mean, would it be the Mets or would it be the Rangers? You know, I mean, the Jets and Giants are far down the list. The Knicks are very far down the list, you know, obviously. But that's a question. You know, the Islanders, I think, would be in the middle there somewhere as well. So that's the question, is who would be that next team that you would give the best odds to after the Yankees? I think that Brooklyn Nets, because of the star power they have on the roster and the way the NBA's played, that's what it'd be. And then quickly on what you asked about the Knicks and front office, the coaching hire is of utmost importance, and I'm hoping this gets done sometime this week. You know, and if they can get it done this week, then obviously then they can move forward now and start building with the team that they want, with the identity they want. And if it's Tom Thibodeau, you know the identity. And it kind of harken back to the better days when defense was what these teams were all about. The Knicks teams, when the Knicks were top 10 in defense, they were always good. It's very, very important to their identity. So we'll see what that hire becomes. Jets and Giants. I mentioned this just earlier, and now the Jets and Giants have put out a statement, a joint statement together, reacting to Governor Murphy from New Jersey, just making it clear that there will be right now no fans allowed at MetLife Stadium for the 2020 NFL season. They put out a statement saying today Governor Murphy announced that due to ongoing public health crisis, his executive order limiting outdoor public gatherings, it will apply to events at MetLife Stadium until further notice. Now, that's the key phrase there, until further notice. So it doesn't mean that the entire season's wiped out. It just means right now, because a lot of fans are probably asking questions and wondering, hey, I got tickets. Can I go to games? I want to plan for my weekends. And so I need answers. And so what they're saying is right now, no, there will be no fans allowed in the building. So until further notice, key phrase there. The decision was reached after careful consideration and current state of COVID-19 crisis in discussions with the Jets and Giants in consideration of health and safety of our fans, players, and staff, which will continue to be the primary focus of our teams. Both teams go on to say they support the decision. And although they prefer to have fans at the games, continue to work with Governor Murphy's office and provide updates if necessary. So also the training camps and practices not open to the public. So none of that stuff that usually is available, as you know, and we every year our station we're usually at Jets and Giants camps doing shows. Several of our shows will be out there, but nope, they're closing all that stuff. So I imagine that includes us as well. Adding also, like I said, just the one more part of the statement that I think is the most important is the until further notice part of it. So right now, that's the plan. Whether it continues to be that way remains to be seen, of course. All right, before we go again, Bart's on with the K-Show next, so you want to stay tuned for him. It's been Han Solo here. And I'll tell you what, I got to be honest with you. I love doing the show. Like, you guys remember, I was on with DiPietro and Canty, and I love doing that show with those guys. Rico and I go back many years, and I love doing shows with them. And the schedule just got crazy because me doing Knick games at night and West Coast games and all kinds of the back-to-backs and then having to get in that early for 10 o'clock, it was rough. It was rough. I had a newborn and just decided, like, I can't do this. So I said, let me change it up. And they were kind enough to say, well, you get Dave Rothenberg in there, who's been a star on that show now, and then move me to nights. And it actually helped me learn how to be a host. Solo at night is fun. Solo is tough. You're by yourself. You've got to carry the conversation and obviously involve the callers and those tweeting as well. And I appreciate you guys today for doing that, because I forgot. I got real lazy with Bart. It's been fun because Bart really obviously dominates and he's great. But man, I'll tell you what. It's tough doing a show alone. Sitting in my office at home. I'm not even in the studio. No one across. There's nobody on the side of the glass. There's no glass. Just me on the call screen. And no one on FaceTime. Usually I'm looking at my iPad and there's Bart's smiling face. He's not there right now. He's looking at Don LaGreca, probably RJ, maybe Andrew. Not even thinking about me and how our show's ending. But we're going to end it with a little story. A little story here. Just an example of media. I talked about this on the IG Live before the show, but I just want to point it out. Because this does happen a lot. Taj Gibson had, with his foundation, he did something in Brooklyn in his home. He's from Fort Greene. And he held something over the weekend that, you know, just to bring out some awareness and to support the community. All good stuff that he does. Now, when Taj Gibson's available for the media, you think, let's see, he played in Chicago and Minnesota for Tom Thibodeau. So, obviously, he's somebody you want to talk to about the potential of Tom taking over as the Knicks head coach, which we could hear at some point this week. And so that's why you want to cover it. And that's what happened. Now, Taj knows he didn't get the job yet. I don't really want to talk about it. So his quote is basically completely innocuous. It's just, you know, I don't want to talk about the coaching situation. You know, I'm sure they'll make the right decision. I'm focused on what my foundation is doing. Okay. And this is a story in the Post. And Mark Berman did the story. Mark Berman did the hustling to get out there and talk to him. Now, this isn't an indictment on Berman at all. This is not even an indictment on the Post. This is just, I think, an example of some reality that we need to understand sometimes when there's this narrative that's out there. Taj has a great quote that's buried in the story. And he said, "Why?" He said the story goes on, instead of talking about his Knicks future, Gibson wanted to talk about focus of the future of youths in the streets of Brooklyn. And his quote is this: this is about young kids losing their lives because of gun violence. The city's gun violence rates have gone up, and I'm trying to step up in the community and calm the tensions. And we're going through tough times with the pandemic. Gibson also went on to praise the NYPD during his speech. So he was trying to be as inclusive as possible and calm everyone down and make everybody understand how important we all are to each other. Okay, he had a lot more to talk about. There was no follow-up, of course. At least there wasn't in the story. This quote buried at the bottom of the story. So when people tell you about, why aren't you talking more about black-on-black crime? Why aren't black people focused on that? Gun violence, everything else. These things do happen. They're just not covered the same way. Why? Because the headline is about the Knicks coach and a player who played for him. And you got to understand, unfortunately, that's the business sometimes. All right, K-Show next. I'll see y'all tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays from 1 to 3 on 98.7 ESPN.